Hello, everyone. Welcome and thanks for coming. Can everyone hear me okay? Just wave your hand if you can. Thank you. Perfect. So thanks for coming to my session. I'm one of the lucky ones to get the post-lunch session, so I'm sure you're all awake and alert. I'll be talking about the art of SharePoint information architecture. And while people are still coming in, I'd like to do a quick poll of the audience. How many of you have SharePoint on-premises installed in your environment? Oh, awesome. Nice. How many of you have Office 365? A few? How many of you have both? Excellent. Great. So, a little bit about me. Who am I? I'm just a guy who consults on SharePoint, Office 365, and Azure. I worked in Melbourne, went to San Fran, and came back. Did some work in 2010, SharePoint 2010, when it was in beta. ADFS 2 when it was in beta and SQL Server. So went through the cycles, was able to get access to the product teams and worked very closely with SharePoint, single sign-on, search, fast, and so forth. And I also do some training in SharePoint and .NET. So the agenda for today is about introducing you to information architecture. Some of you may already know what it is. What it is, how it enables you to form strong emotional bonds, what are the components that make up IA, in, just generally speaking. So after this session, you'll be able to understand the basic components of IA. You'll be able to understand the components in SharePoint that relate to IA. And you'll be able to kind of create or kind of translate an abstract IA model into SharePoint. Learn about a single approach to deploying the information architecture into both SharePoint and Office 365, which is sorely needed. Start doing what I'm doing right now on your own Office 365 site with a free trial. All you need is a phone number, an Australian phone number, and then start feeding off that. So once you've defined your information architecture, once you've defined your taxonomy, what happens after? So, you know, things like forms, workflows, policy settings, search, and the new Delve interface. So I'll go into that a little bit. The idea is to take you from this, which is basically a list of documents that everybody has in the organizations, to something that kind of has context around it, and then basically be able to feed that back into search to make up a very useful SharePoint site. So think about this. Any guesses what's in the can? Something I really hate, actually. Everything. So if you looked at a can without any labels, right, that's what you're really doing. You're guessing. You don't know what the contents are. You're not able to form an emotional bond to it. And it kind of goes contradictory to the way we live our lives. Now, if you think about everything in your life, your close ones, celebrities you follow, movies you like, there are, whenever you think about each one of those things, things will flash in your mind about the attributes that describe those objects in the world. That's basically what taxonomy is. It's those little attributes that allow you to form a very close emotional bond. So going back to this, completely unlabeled, don't know what it is. You know, it's some kind of canned food, maybe. It's actually spaghetti, something I really hate. So that's how users normally feel in organizations when they're basically given a dump of the files, right, into SharePoint. So it basically take something out of your file shares and put it into SharePoint. Now, I'm a guy who loves tuna. I eat tuna 3 times a week, and I'm sure, how many of you like tuna? Yeah, right, great. So I normally sometimes work from home. I have maybe like 10 minutes, and I need to find a particular brand of tuna. I like to buy the Poland line caught, the sustainably fished ones. So you go into a supermarket, and this is what I see. This is my actual supermarket. And I see rows and rows of tuna, different colors, different organizations, touting different things. Sometimes, if I only have 10 minutes, I need to go, pick my stuff, come back, have lunch, start working again. I'm bewildered, really, by all this, when I really want this, right? It was somewhere in the corner, and it's not really obvious because it doesn't sell that well. So the point I'm making is, in order to find something that is of interest to yourself, you really need to have the taxonomy, the navigation, to help you get there, right? So it's about defining that context, making that emotional connection with the target audience to find what you're looking for. So based on this, you can see that it's pole caught, sustainably fished. It's got ingredients. It's got a breakdown of everything I need. Doesn't have a mercury warning, but there you go. So what is taxonomy and why I should care, right? So how would you describe taxonomy? Can someone take a guess? If I was to describe taxonomy, what would you say? Anyone? I'll pick you.
Class it as a formal vocabulary describing the knowledge that you have, the content and data that you have.
Very good. A form of vocabulary describing the content that you have. Very nice. Great. I'll have to think about that. That's really good. So, in layman's terms, people call it data about data, information about information, right? That's what everybody normally says. A way of describing something. Metadata is commonly used. Metadata by itself is not enough. Metadata is again an abstract concept. So this guy, Seth Meislin, look him up on LinkedIn, one of the leading proponents of taxonomy and written some publications. He calls it the isness of something. It's something that makes something what it is to us, right? The way we perceive the world is not the way the world is. Right, it's how we interpret it. So look at celebrities, very good example. They may be completely different in real lives, but the way they're marketed to you, the way they're presented to you is completely different. So taxonomy, metadata, is a contract. It's a contract that describes an abstract, well, not an abstract, an entity to you in terms that you can relate emotionally. If you understand that that relation, then you can take that same a connection to data, to objects, to your enterprise, and use that to drive the success of your website. So it gives us certain things. When we have information about information, it gives us findability, obviously the number one thing, being able to do very fine-grained searches, being able to use things like Delve. I don't know if you've looked into Delve, the new app from Microsoft that's built on the Office Graph interface, which does predictive analysis, right? It tells you what you want before you even know that you want it. It gives us policy, right? So, you know, not every document lives forever in a company, in the business context. So it allows us to define policies for generic terms, like, you know, for example, this sales document would live for 3 years and it'll be archived and disposed of within 5 years, for example. And then it allows us to create these business processes of the information, right? So you can tie a certain business process, a certain audit policy, a certain approval policy to a certain content type. So it gives us quite a lot. So what is taxonomy in SharePoint, right? So it's very similar. They're SharePoint kind of artifacts that map to the real world definitions of taxonomy, right? So there's things like folksonomies. Folksonomies are things like common terms that you use, HR, human resources. Things like that you use for the word, say, father, right? So like father, dad, pop, things like that. Those are folksonomies. And within SharePoint, you have the ability to tie in those folksonomies to a very central, rigid format of taxonomy, which is based on the metadata, and then basically, it's basically a one-to-one match to be able to define workflows to policies against those generic buckets of data. So here's a very common example that I see in nearly a lot of my clients all too often. Somebody has a great idea, maybe the CEO or the CIO, and they said, look, we're going to get SharePoint, we're going to implement it. We have a two-person infrastructure team, and they're going to look after it. Great, we'll do it. We have this huge file share. Let's migrate into SharePoint. So what they do is they literally pick up the file share and dump it in SharePoint, right? And you end up with this mess. And it doesn't solve the use case. The use case being, I want this document right now, like within, say, 10 minutes. I have a very important meeting, and the poor guy who's actually doing the grunt work will basically be scratching his head trying to do that. So you end up looking like this. This is a very common scenario. I mean, I feel like that. I do a lot of sales proposals sometimes, right? And I normally cobble together different bits of different documents, you know, standard templates and things like that. And everybody's on a deadline, right? So I'll be in a situation where I need to deliver something, but I can't find the information because it's not set up properly. So let's talk about SharePoint, right? So SharePoint's implementation of taxonomy. There's two types of taxonomy within SharePoint. Inside the site collection and outside the site collection. So let's talk about the taxonomy up here, right? So SharePoint comes with the term store, which defines the common terms, the enterprise terms that are used in your organization. Think of Microsoft. We actually led a project where we implemented the taxonomy for Microsoft marketing in the US. So they have a pretty broad catalog of terms that contain things like the products that are not yet released even. They have code words and things like that. They have categorizations, departments, sub-reports, things like that, right? That they are kind of standard in the organization. So SharePoint provides something called the term store, which allows you to define the taxonomy, and we'll do some actual demos later on. It defines data about data, and then it can actually tie taxonomy. So it can tie synonyms or things that are used to describe the same thing in a different slang to one term. So it gives you unification. And then it basically, it comes from the history of file shares, folders, and document properties, which basically migrate into SharePoint. So if you were to dump, say, an image in a SharePoint image library, you'll automatically see it start extracting some of the properties out of that image, right? Like the size and the quality and things like that. On the other side, within SharePoint, you have the concept of taxonomy, which is defined within the site collection and outside the site collection. So within a site collection, this is like a big bucket of things within SharePoint, right? You have a site collection, right, which can map to a database. Then you have the web. And within the web, you have content types and libraries. So content types essentially are the kind of a container, if you like, that describes the top level of something of interest, right? So this is a sales document, for example, would be a content type. Then within the content type, you actually have columns, right? So different columns. And then you have libraries. So these are actually repositories of data, kind of loosely tied to your drives and your folders, and which work off the content types, which work of the site columns. I don't like the way they've carried forward the folders, right? So they've carried forward folders. Folders is a special content type into SharePoint. But what ends up happening is users start creating folders because they're used to creating folders, right? And many organizations are actually going and disable that. They should be using document sets. Document sets is used to group sets of documents together, so it's a special content type. And then outside the site collection, you have the services. Now, services are all-encompassing, so they are not tied to one website. They are shared. They can be shared between different applications, different site collections, different sites, different farms. So they are a bit broad. And within that, you have the concept of the managed metadata service. So the managed metadata service essentially hasn't changed too much from SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint 2013. It basically allows you to define, as I said, the term store, the content type hub, basically the taxonomy of your organization. So enough with this. I'll quickly switch over to a demo. And I'll go from here. No good? Just a second, please. I'll get them to look into this. So what I wanted to show you really was The term store in action. See, try it one more time, please. Just bear with me. There we go. Excellent. Thank you. So I'm going to go basically into the site itself, into the site settings, and show you how to get to the term store. This is an Office 365 site. I'm going to talk about the actual demo, the context of the demo. But for now, I just want to show you the term store. So in the site settings, a little bit under here, it says term store management. Go into that. And this is basically a central area for collating your organization's taxonomy. So for the demonstration, I've created a little folder here. Don't worry about the terms, but I'll do an introduction later on. So I want to show you a term for folksonomy. So say that the term father, right, can have a bunch of different synonyms or folksonomies against it. So in your organization, if you have said that the term HR, you can tie that together. And what happens is when people search for one of the slangs, it knows what you're looking for. So going back into this. Site navigation is also a form of taxonomy, right? Because it describes the structure of your site. It may not really be how your site is physically laid out, but it's how people perceive your site to be. Right, so site navigation is also a form of taxonomy. And in SharePoint, you can actually create the navigational structure in the term store and then tie it back to your site. It's definitely possible. So for example, you can create vanity URLs or what do you call them? Yeah, vanity URLs where you have slash product A, which may actually rewrite to something else completely different along a URL and then tie that to your site collection. So that's definitely possible. So, yep, managed metadata service we covered. I'm going to talk a little bit about the content type hub as well. Content type hub, how many of you have used the content type hub in SharePoint? How many of you like it? No one likes it. Yeah, exactly. So the idea behind the content type hub was let's nominate a site collection and let's get people start creating columns and content types in that hub. And this magical little thing will take care of taking that taxonomy and distributing it throughout the rest of your site collections. It's a great idea in theory. In reality, though, the more levels of abstraction, the more difficult it becomes to maintain your site. So in effect, the content type hub itself becomes a level of abstraction. And on top of that, it actually has a bunch of limitations around why you should not use it. So my advice would be, don't use it. I mean, if you don't need to, don't use it. Just script out, and we'll talk about the deployment scenario, but basically target every site where you want to deploy your taxonomy directly. Do not introduce this another layer in the middle. So there's some limitations. You know, lookups may not work as expected. Workflows are not supported. Custom fields, external content types are fields that look out into an external database that are not supported. And feature dependencies are not supported. So for example, if you went ahead and defined a document set content type and you deployed it to a target site, it's not smart enough to activate the feature that it needs in the first place. So it'll all break. It won't work. So if you are using it, please remember to know the limitations before choosing, republish it, and then have a very strong governance policy. But my advice is just go directly to the site collection, and I can talk to you about the method. So we talked about the term store. I'm going to skip over that quickly. Now, search is the end goal. The result of doing all this upfront work around the information architecture is to give your users instant ability to find documents. Now, if you go back to that stressed out guy among a pile of documents, that's the scenario we're targeting. We've got a meeting in an hour or half an hour. I want this document, this sales document. We did this for this client in this period within 10 minutes, right? That's your goal. That's your use case. If you can meet that use case, you've succeeded in your organization. So... In the on-premises SharePoint, you've got the concept of search scopes that basically allow you to create targeted searches. So I could create a scope around set the staff register or something like that, or the sales proposals documents, and scope it to that. You can also create refiners, right? So you can take out the columns that you defined and allow them to be refined on the left. And we'll do a demo on that as well. Search scopes are not supported in Office 365. There was an interesting discussion on this on the web from a guy called Victor Whelan, who's kind of well-known in the SharePoint community. And he was stressing about this, you know, search scopes are not supported. There's an alternative called result scopes. And the reason why it's not supported is there's an upper limit. So in Office 365, it's a multi-tenant system. So Microsoft has to provide 99.9% availability with the financial backing to all these clients. And they cannot afford technology that has an upper limit. So it's ruled out. But you can get the same effect using result sources. Catalogs is a very interesting form of search that works off your taxonomy. So you can take any document library in SharePoint, go into its settings, and turn it into a catalog. Good. So if I was in my site, I'd go into site contents. And say, pick any document library, really. In the document library settings, under catalog settings, I can enable the document library as a catalog. And what it does, it basically creates a structured search. So it takes all the properties of the document library, makes them managed properties, so makes them searchable. And then this little setting down here is interesting. It's not what you think. It doesn't make your items anonymously available to everyone. What it does, it makes your search index available to everyone. There's a difference, right? So it only makes what's searched about your document library available when they click on the search link. It still respects the security. Now, this is commonly used in that scenario. So authoring site collections. Now, in the old SharePoint, when say you had a public-facing site and you had some internal content and you wanted to publish the content out to the external public, you'd have content deployments. So you'd basically physically copy the content to the public site collection after an approval. Now, with 2013, what happens is you can actually author in one site collection, keep your content there, enable catalogs, and then use the index of that catalog for surfacing out your content. Right, so there's actually a corresponding web part called the search web part, which can basically link against the content and basically draw the UI. So it can, you know, you say you have a news article or news about your company or some internal whatever it is, it can actually work off the index. It doesn't need full access to the document. Now, if you've made that item, like if it's a news article and it's published and it's got a major version, if you've made that publicly available, you can definitely get to it. So just another thing you can use. So what's the advantages of doing all this work? It answers the question of where do I store my content, produces highly relevant content, allows you to do scoping of the search, refinement, drilling down of your search and filtering and all that sort of stuff, plus policies and workflows. So here's the exciting bit. I thought about this demonstration. I thought make it a little bit more fun. So I invented this Tipping Tots daycare system. So this one guy has this idea about creating a daycare franchise, right? And he wants to sell this as a service to actual daycare providers. So they would go in and track a bunch of things about the kids, and he would just sell it as a service. And he doesn't want to spend too much money, so what he's decided to do is this guy wants to create Office 365 site collections. So you'd have, one subscription and then site collections for different franchisees. So the workflow, the typical workflow, right, of any daycare is that parents would come in, drop off their kids, run away. The staff looks after the kids, do whatever they have to do, and then parents pick it up, right? So that's the basic workflow. However, there are certain things that are required for compliance and from the parent side as well. So I'm a parent, right? When I drop off my kid, especially when he was between the ages of, say, one to two, I wanted to know certain things. Was he feeding well? Was he eating well? You know, how was his toilet routine? Was he going on time? Attendance records, obviously, you need. And from the daycare perspective, for compliance purposes, they need to know who dropped off the kid, when they dropped him off, who signed in, who picked up the kid. They have to keep a registered list of people who can actually interact with kids and things like that. And there's certain other requirements around claiming Centrelink benefits and things like that. So that's kind of the workflow. So looking at that workflow, you can immediately see some entities, right? So think like a business owner now. You've got a problem to solve. Now think about the high-level entities that you'd get out of that. So you'd have the staff, people who look after your kids, who are rostered, right? So who actually work the whole week. So you need to know in advance who's working when, in which room. There's a requirement to have a room leader per room, so a person who's a little bit more qualified, who's got a diploma in childcare. There are guardians. Guardians are people who look after kids, who could be grandparents, parents, uncles, aunts, whoever is authorized to drop and pick up the kids. Then you need to keep attendance records and toilet trainings and things like that. So looking at that, we can immediately start conceptualizing content types in SharePoint. So we can say, all right, we'll have something called staff and guardian, child, attendance, roster, party, and all that. And the content types it's a one-to-one almost match with lists, containers that hold the data. Now, the beauty about this is once you define it, once you solve the problem for one franchise, you can sell it to other franchises because it's the same problem over and over again, right? So the next part is working out the dependencies. So you'd have, obviously the staff is pretty straightforward. You know, just keep a record of people. Guardians are people who look after the kids. Now, you don't want people typing in. Now, this is something that goes back to your terms, though. You don't want people typing in different words for dad, father, whatever like that. So you'd want to link it to a term in your terms, though. So that would basically go back into your terms, though. Let me actually show you that content type. So here's me defining everything. I've got a little group I can filter down on. sorry, wrong one. Let me get into stuff. So, guardian type, right? This special column. This special column is let's get into the column. It's what's called a managed column. So the managed columns are special columns that link back to your central taxonomy, right? So they all grab the data from there. So in this case, it reaches into my taxonomy and attaches itself to the guardian type. And I know that there are certain types which I have preset, and there's other as well. So you can control that. You can say, all right, people can only enter all of that. You can even allow people to append to the list. So that's all possible. Six. So you've got a bunch of columns, all right? You've got guardians and all that. Now, the next thing to worry about, as with any information architecture, is dependencies, and that's where people trip up, right? So if, for example, the child has guardians against it, right? So the child has lookups. Looks up that list, right? When you do a deployment, when you build your information architecture, if you don't deploy in the right order, then of course things will break, right? So that's one of the things to look out for. And the other thing is this. Typically, when after you finish defining the information architecture and you go into SharePoint and you implement it, it's easy to do it the easy way, right? So people typically don't think about different environments. In this case, he has to worry about different franchises, basically different site collections. But when you do it in your organization, you don't worry about that. You go into the UI and you start kind of creating columns and content types and lists and attaching stuff, right? But then you've got to start thinking about deployment environments, right? Are you able to take what you've defined and move it to a different environment? And if you do it the out of the box way, the answer is no. And I'll tell you why. So if you're moving, say you've defined everything, right? The taxonomy, the term store. If you move this taxonomy, if you export and import it into another environment and you deploy your, you create the, I guess you back up and restore the database, as soon as you open your list, you'll see red squiggle marks everywhere. And what happens is, in SharePoint, it starts breaking the linkages. So what happens is every item in SharePoint has an internal ID. It's a 16-bit GUID. So say I link it to a column in the term store, it uses an internal ID to do the linkages. As soon as you change environments, SharePoint creates new IDs, and bang, you've broken it. So it can get frustrating. However, well, let's look at a software project, or let's look at any type of project. You really want continuous build. You want codeless as much as possible. So you want to do codeless solutions first, in SharePoint especially. And then if you can't do it through that, you'd probably want to do PowerShell, and then the last resort is going and coding it, right? So apps is probably the preferred. Now, doing it the out-of-the-box way, it doesn't meet any of those requirements. So there's actually a way to do it. In this case, you do it the same way, right? So you define everything in a site collection. You use the site collection as the baseline. But then you can actually use, and I'll give this out at the end of my demo, there's actually some PowerShell scripts that you can run that will take what you've defined, right, and move it back into a SharePoint package. So that's called a codeless solution. It's purely pure XML configuration. So I'll give you a quick demo. I'm exporting my content types here, right? I've defined everything. I'm perfect, happily with my information architecture. I run this. This actually connects to my Office 365 site, uses some PowerShell, grabs the content types, and pulls it down. It should take maybe another 10 seconds or so. It's not very big. Oops. Let me just refresh my site. I think my internet is down. Just a second. Let's try it once more. Once it's finished, it should look like this. Let's be tethering. It's okay, I've got a backup that I can use. But I'll show you what it looks like, then I'll fire it off once more. Once it's finished, it should look something like this. So what it does, sorry, this one here. So what it does, it actually exports it the right way. It actually grabs the internal IDs for your columns and your content types and brings it down. And using that, I can actually, I have a solution where I can basically do a one-click deployment. I can blow away the SharePoint environment, right? Create a brand new vanilla environment and deploy my information architecture, including the taxonomy, the site columns, and the content types to any environment. This is what I wanted. And that's what I said earlier about not using the content type hub, is basically scripting everything out. This way, it's environment agnostic. So going back to the presentation, this allows you to have everything. It allows you to have continuous build, a codeless solution, and a partial environment. I did this exercise actually a couple of days ago with a power user, right? So he was able to, once we went through the process, he was able to actually create the information architecture for his company and reverse engineer that back into solutions. So what you end up with is a bunch of PowerShells, which I'll give out at the end of the session, plus a solution file, which has the XML that creates your information architecture. That's the right way to do it, because that way it's always going to be consistent, right? It's not going to be dependent on any one environment. The other thing to worry about is the deployment itself. Now, if you have a complicated setup where you have a base list, say you have a list of things that is a lookup for something else, you need to make sure that you deploy in the right order. So order is also important. If you don't do it, then you know it'll waste time looking for things and it just won't work. So in my scenario, I just create a bunch of features with the right order. So I have a base set of columns, which is about 80% of stuff I need to deploy, and then the base content types, and then I create the lists out of that, and then I have the base, the second level, and the third level, and so forth. So when I deploy this in a one-click deployment in any environment, whether it already exists or it does not exist, so it could be a partial deployment, it's failed, it'll actually clean up everything and deploy it in the right order. So it deactivates, deploy, tie them all together, activate in the right order, and done. And I've done this literally like 100 times without fail. So this will get you a lot of the way there. Let me stop that for a second and show you what the website looks right now. So I'm hoping internet is up again. So the guy basically started off with this, and this is what you could do after the session. You can basically go into office.microsoft.com and go into products and pricing. And right at the end of the page, there's actually a button for a free trial. All you need is your Australian phone number, and you get a 30-day trial. So get the maximum on 300 users and play with it for a month. So without spending any money, you have a portal. Within the portal then, well, you get a whole bunch of stuff. You get link and a collaboration and calendaring and My Sites and 1 terabyte of storage per user. And you get SharePoint, Office 365 as well. So within SharePoint, the whole idea was, come on. Within SharePoint, the whole idea was the guy would spin up a private site collection for every franchisee, run the PowerShell script, set everything up, and off you go, start entering data. It's thinking. There we go. Perfect. So going back to the root site collection, let me try disconnecting this one here. So the root site collection basically has a bunch of gauges to show what's happening, and it'll come up shortly. So things like attendance tracking, what the kids are doing, who picked them up, who dropped them off. You can basically show a single gauge for all of that. So when this is up and running, so sorry about this. So okay, we'll move back to this and I'll do a quick demo after it's up and running. It is running. Okay, perfect. So this is the gauge. This is what it looks like on the home page. So you have, oops. So you have the attendance tracking at the top here. Let me make it a bit smaller so you can see. So you have attendance tracking at the top here. You can break it down by room and all that. So this is basically lists on your page, right? It shows who's come in, who's gone out. This is your roster, who's assigned to which room. On the right here, you can see quick contacts, right? So who are your guardians? Who do we need to contact in the case of an emergency? Who are the room leaders in the current room? Who are the current assigned staff? What's the party records for the kids, right? So parents normally want that, believe it or not. Parents want that. So you could basically very easily go in and export it to an Excel spreadsheet and mail it out, you know, for that particular parent. So at a glance, without really doing too much coding, I have a basic site where I can capture information, right? That easy. I have a way of doing deployments that's reliable. I've got all of that happening without doing much. Now, let's go back and talk about the last part, which is search. So in SharePoint, what happens is when you create content types, when you create the information architecture, and you create a list that's the result of the information architecture, SharePoint's search crawler, this is both SharePoint Online on-premises, it hits the list, it finds the columns, and it creates what's called a crawled property. So it's basically a property in the index. It doesn't really mean much, right? And then the way you surface that out to the end user is you need a managed property. So SharePoint by default will create a managed property automatically for a list item. However, there is a limitation with that, in that the managed property that SharePoint creates automatically is not refinable. So that means you can search on it, but you can't refine it. So in order to do that, I've got some links at the end of this deck. You basically have to use or create a new managed property that is an alias for this one, right? And that allows you to do things like this. So let's go into search. So create a very, very basic search center and do a search for star. Right, I just took a search page and I customized it, and I've scoped it to the staff registry. On the left, over here, this is what's called a refinable property. So I took the first name, right? The first name is a site column, so that will be present site-wide. And I allowed it to be refinable. So when I do a search, I can actually refine it to a property or a thing of interest, right? So you can take that same logic now and do very drill down type searches. So for example, I'm searching for a sales document or a sales template. I might just search for the word template for this particular area, and I'll get all these results. Now I could say I want to drill down by client, I want to drill down by department, I want to drill down by some other attribute, right? That'll eventually allow me to drill down into what I need, right? It won't give me it probably won't give me what I need right away if there's too many there's a lot of matches, but allow me to drill down. So out of the box, you get things like the date modified. You can change the facets here. Doesn't help much. You get the author, which is an out-of-the-box property, but then you can start adding your own, right? So you can start doing refiners. You can do sorting. You can do a lot more once you have your taxonomy. Once you've got basic search working and you've got content showing up and people liking your site and the adoption increasing, they can even start doing analytics. Now, search in SharePoint is very powerful, and I'll tell you a little bit about the history of search. So Microsoft acquired Fast Search, right? So Fast Search at the time was, I think, built or scripted in Python or something like that. And once, if you wanted to do something advanced, you'd have to go down into Python scripting and do customizations that way. Then they basically rewrote the Fast Search engine, right? So they rewrote it entirely in .NET, and what's SharePoint Search now used to be Fast. Now, Fast came in, I think, two or three flavors, Fast ESP, Fast for SharePoint, and Fast for Internet sites, which is very confusing. So they rolled all that up into SharePoint Search, and you get that with an enterprise license. You get that with Office 365. It is a very, very powerful search engine. Use it, right? So it's not only for finding stuff, you can also use it for analytics. Now, if you have a very fast search index, right, and you've got the index skewed on the stuff you're interested in, so things like your column names and things like that, you can actually build very smart reports. You can build very smart reports, and you can take the load off your SharePoint system. You can actually work off the search index. The drawback there is if your site is heavy on content and content is being added all the time, then the index will be updated in the next crawl, right? So with the SharePoint on premises, you can control the rate of the crawl. So you can say, I'm going to do it every 10 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. But with SharePoint online, you don't really have a choice. You can sometimes wait up till a day, but it's normally within an hour when the index is rebuilt. So if you have a very fast site, you may just want to work against the list directly. But if not, if you want to scale out your site, you can definitely work against the search interface. And you can do very smart things. So in the demo here, I don't know if you caught it, but in the website, this one up here, the room leaders, I actually built a very simple pure JavaScript HTML web part, right? And all it does, it calls the search index and says, can you find me everyone in the staff or the content type of staff? And then can you also find within that an attribute which says they are a room leader? So the room leader attribute goes true. And it's just like instant, right? So I can use that to build very rich UIs in my user interface without putting a lot of load on the system. And that's the way the search should be used. If you query your lists, SharePoint lists, quite a lot, you will find, you'll very very often find hitting the, you'll find that you'll hit the list view threshold limit. Who has already done that? One, are you in the like the reporting team or the BI team? Okay, yeah. So generally, like when you do performance points reports or things like that, you are scanning the whole list. Like if it's got 10,000, 20,000, a million items, you're scanning through that to perform your analysis, right? And SharePoint has built-in throttling features because it puts a lot of load on the system. So SharePoint will say, all right, I'm going to throttle you. If you are accessing more than, say, 10,000 items in one request, I'm going to just stop the request. It'll kill the request. So that's where search is actually quite good, because search has no limitations like that, right? So you can do what you really whatever you really want to do. So use that a lot, please. So I'd like you to take a look. The code that I demoed is open source. The PowerShells are open source. Take it into your organizations. You can sign up, create your own site collection now. You can take my script, change the user ID and password, and just deploy it on your own brand new site collection in Office 365 within an hour. Right? Try that out, please. Go back to your enterprises, find existing documents that are sitting in the file share. Just create one content type for your whole organization. Just create one called Organization A content type. Add a bunch of non-mandatory fields, right? And replace and make that the default content type for all your document libraries. Do that at the minimum, right? And then feed that into search. You'll see the adoption rate of your site skyrocket, because people will be finding stuff they actually want, not garbage that they're not really searching for, right? So it won't be the free text search anymore. It'll be more intelligent. And then you can take that to the next level, look at Performance Point, look at some SQL Server reporting services, and actually, or even just custom JavaScript HTML, build off the search index, build your analytics, right? So you can build really, really complicated sites out of that. So please do that. And with the Delve, just touching briefly on that, how many of you do you know about Delve? Few, okay. So Delve is basically, think of it like an app based on the Office Social API. I've seen it in action. It's pretty new right now. It's being rolled out to some of the tenants on the Office 365. So what it does, it's like Facebook for your enterprise. It will keep a record of who you're interacting with, whose documents you're following, whose sites you're following, who you're following, whose news groups you're in. So it keeps a record of all of that and predicts what you're interested in. So you'd basically go to your My Page, and it'll probably surface up the document that you did a presentation for 2 days ago, because somebody else that you follow also did the same presentation or something like that, right? So it's really weird. Once it rolls out, please play with it. It's really weird in the way it predicts what you actually want. Now, if the document library, if the content that it actually does a graph on is rich in itself, it's not just a document, it's got these extra attributes, you can imagine how much smarter it will get and how much more relevant it'll be for you. So please try that out. There are some helpful links at the end of this slide, which you can grab. The patterns and practices ones I would highly recommend. Those are samples that the Microsoft team have done and are sending out. And there's the top two are the bits I followed for building the search schema and the custom refiners for your content types. There's another presentation at 4:40 on building hybrid search with OneDrive. Highly recommend that. Please do check it out. And thanks for coming. Please, just a reminder, don't forget your evaluations. That helps us plan better sessions and be better presenters for the future. Thank you so much. I've got about a few minutes for questions if anybody has some. I'm happy to take it, or if you want to see me afterwards, that's fine as well. Shoot.
The link that you put up for your stuff is actually, you've got to mention it's a capital I at the end,
oh, yeah,
not a lowercase L, because yep, it goes to an expired Craigslist site. Oh. So
okay, I'll fix that up.
Make sure it's a capital I.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
Okay. I use Bitly, I don't know, probably screwed up.
But if you use it as an L.
Ah, it works?
No, if you put in, so the lowercase L takes you to an expired Craigslist.
Fair enough.